I wanna tell you here.
Can't you
hear the church bell tolling?
Church bells tolling.
I wonder, can you hear?
Can't you hear
the church bell tolling?
Church bells tolling.
I wanna tell you here.
Can't you hear
the church bell tolling?
Church bells tolling.
Well, yonder. Help me now. The hearse will roll.
The hearse will roll.
Well, yonder.
Well, yonder.
Well, yonder.
Well, yonder.
In the new barren ground.
Barren ground.
It kept on rolling.
Kept on rolling. Kept on rolling.
Till it rolled my father.
My father to the grave.
It kept on rolling.
Kept on rolling.
And one more. It rolled my father, God knows it did. It kept on rolling, Lord help me now. Till it rolled
my father to the grave.
It almost makes you think that it's Friday night and you're tuned to the Gospel Train, but you're not. This is Make a Better World, where we connect community activity to community radio here on 100.5 FM CFRO, your Vancouver Cooperative Radio Station, listener-supported, always commercial-free for 40 years. That was the sensational Nightingales with the great screaming voice of June Cheeks, Burying Ground, which relates to our program in a big way today. It gives me great pleasure to turn the airwaves over to Eric Lees from Lees and Associates Landscape Architecture, who is also the president of the Green Burial Society of Canada. And Eric will present to you information about green burial, what the society does, and importantly, the fact that there is going to be a public symposium at Mountain View Cemetery next Saturday, November the 7th, starting at 1:30, from 1:30 to 4:30. And you can get more information on that by going to greenburialcanada.ca. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, we've talked about this for a while, getting you folks on the air. It's such an important part of community, and it's so topical. In the government, they're talking about end of life, who makes decisions. There's a, you know, home death movement so that you can, you know, pass in peace without so many wires and beeps going on. And then, of course, we get to how do we celebrate that life? So, again, without further ado, thank you for being here and take it away.
My pleasure, Mark. Do you talk about death, dying? In cemeteries around your dinner table?
Well, I have an unusual household, you understand.
I know you do.
I run the only dedicated brass funeral band in the province, so yeah, that's a common topic, but most people don't.
Most people don't. That's exactly it. Most people do not. Will you be cremated? Will you be buried? Do you know what your friends and family, what their desire is when they die? Well, in our family, that dinner conversation is often punctuated by conversations like this. As landscape architects, sacred landscapes, choices of cremation or burial, and, you know, so many other aspects of our end-of-life experience do come up. And I've had the privilege of working with families in the bereavement sector and communities across Canada, somewhat in the States and even in Africa about these matters. And it's been a fascinating journey and one that I'm delighted to share with the community today. We're talking about green burial, which is just one facet of the spectrum of burial options here in Vancouver. But it is a growing trend across North America. It really started in the UK 15, 18 years ago and came across the pond and started in the States, and has the trend has moved up into Canada in the last 5-8 years. Today we're going to be talking to two prominent cemetery leaders that have led the green burial movement here in both Vancouver and Victoria. Well, why is this important? The fact of the matter is that 4,000 people a year die in Vancouver. Most of them are choosing cremation. You know, as many as 80% of most folks are choosing cremation. And for those that choose a traditional casket burial, the options in Vancouver are pretty limited, as we'll hear in a few moments. And environmentally, as far as cremation is concerned, it may not be as sustainable over time as fossil fuels become more and more rare, more and more expensive. As people begin to understand the fact that 27, 30, 35 liters of equivalent gasoline is used for a cremation, not to mention some particulate release and potential mercury issues, but mostly it's the fossil fuel issues associated with cremation. I think that a lot of people believe cremation is the most environmentally sensitive disposition choice, but that's not always the case. And so green burial will be key to ensuring that we have meaningful, beautiful places of memory and remembrance for years and generations to come. So what is green burial? Well, green burial is composed of two or more of the following five main components. First of all, no embalming. That's pretty standard. For reasons which, again, are probably obvious, the use of chemicals and critically the impact on the embalmers. Formaldehyde is not a pleasant substance, and so there's some concern about formaldehyde. The ground issues are not as much of an issue as some people may think, but a simple casket, a wooden casket or a shroud, is a key component of green burial. There are no cement liners in a green burial. Cement consumes a huge amount of energy to produce. So there are no casket liners. There's usually a very simple or sometimes even no memorialization. It may be a communal marker that has a number of names or birth and death dates on it, but really the memorialization is pretty simple or basic or not non-existent, and almost always some aspect of habitat improvement or native vegetation is planted on top of the grave. With that description of green burial, it's been a wonderful experience talking about just a simple back to what for those of you from Jewish or Muslim tradition will know as they'll recognize these as components of their burial tradition or First Nations. We've done a lot of work up north, and it's been so gratifying working with the Inuk people there and to hear them talk about how even in a modern cemetery situation, it's essentially a green burial. So what is old is new again in many respects, and I think you'll hear as well this morning that there's the social aspect of a green burial movement. The music we were playing earlier and imbues that sense of connection and just the not the celebration of life, but you know, these are mournful times, and we need to become much more adept at handling grief and death and mourning in our society. And so one of the great things about the green burial movement is the social aspect. That there's an aspect of celebration associated with it. So, as I said a moment ago, we had the pleasure of two prominent leaders in cemetery management and administration here with us today. But before I introduce them, I want to also mention that coming up November 7th, Mount View Cemetery, Green Burial Symposium, where we'll be talking nothing but green burial for a few hours with the community. Really encourage folks to go to greenburialcanada.ca for further information, or just come down to Mount View Cemetery, 1 p.m. Saturday afternoon, November 7th.
And there'll be a film also.
And there'll be a film also, yeah, The Will for the Woods, which is all about green burial. So when we come back, I will be speaking with leading cemetery expert from right here in Vancouver.
And let's listen to a track. And this one goes out to the friends and family of Leon Bibb, whose service was held for his interment at Mountain View Cemetery this past Wednesday. And this is a recording, and Leon passed at age 93, prominent in our community and throughout North America, and this is a recording that he did just a few years ago.
Deep rivers, my home is over Jordan. Deep rivers, Lord, I want to cross over into campground. I've known rivers, ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood in human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans. And I've seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers.
Leon Bibb with Deep River and the Langston Hughes poem, I've Known Rivers. You're tuned to 100.5 FM CFRO, your Vancouver cooperative radio station, listener supported, always commercial free. It is our member drive season. And if you want to become a member of the station, which we hope you do, you can email makeabetterworldradio@gmail.com and we will contact you and make sure that happens. Or at the end of the hour today, call us at 684-8494. And we are with Eric Lees from Lees and Associates Landscape Architects, and Eric is the president of the Green Burial Society of Canada.
We've been talking green burial. We have the pleasure of Glenn Hodges' company this morning. Glenn is the manager of Mountain View Cemetery. He is one of Canada's leading cemeterians, and I can say after working with Glenn for many years, he brings a passion to serving Vancouverites in this unique manner that is palpable. It's infectious. Every day of the last 20 or so years in cemetery management and leadership, Glenn has been part of thousands of families and their most emotionally intense and difficult days of their lives. He does a difficult job. He does it very well. Welcome, Glenn Hodges.
Oh, thank you, Eric.
Before the break, I talked about the general tenets of green burial. I didn't talk so much about the way green cemeteries have been certified and have been broken out over time. You manage one of Canada's leading hybrid green cemeteries. Tell us more about what that is and how that's been.
Right. So you talked earlier about sort of the five main criteria for green burial. Our cemetery here in Vancouver, historically and long before this sort of green burial designation came around, was meeting several of those criteria. The one that we don't meet is a naturalized area where you sort of return the space to native plants. Our cemetery first filled up in 1964. A couple renovations enabled us to extend to 1986, but we just don't have any undeveloped space to develop that naturalized area. So that's what makes our cemetery a hybrid cemetery. We meet all of the conditions except for that one.
But it's important to note that you have a plan underway right now to plant 500 or more trees on that site, which will add considerably to the urban forest canopy in the community and the goals of the Greener City movement. So
again, you know, we're not able to set aside land or return it to native state, but we are in many ways actually more sustainably using existing cemetery space, which I think is partners very well and is actually another key aspect of this.
You're not using valuable water, or you haven't sprayed there for many years. We both know that. And of course that has some downsides, but on the whole, it's gotta be one of the most sustainable landscapes in the city.
Yeah. And we've sort of, been doing it, either doing it for 80 or 90 or 100 years that way, or sort of fell into it for other reasons. Again, in Vancouver and the West Coast, I mean, environmental concerns are huge here. So I think the city of Vancouver is one of the first cities to not use pesticides, to outlaw them. We stopped watering our turf years and years ago. And for those not familiar with the West Coast, we get dry in the summertime. It's noticeable. Our grass becomes very brown. We don't use burial vaults, haven't for more than 30 years. One of the only cemeteries, our grounds are quite lumpy and pumpy. So we're not quite the manicured cemetery, which for many years was a bit of a challenge for folks and even for the cemetery, and now has become one of those sort of celebrated aspects of green burial and environmental sustainability, and now we're actually sort of falling into probably leading the country in that type of cemetery.
Yeah. Glenn, talk about the policy that goes back many, many years here in Vancouver of using some of those graves over again.
Yeah, that was, I started in Saskatoon for 6 years and had the standard cemetery with burial vaults and liners and one or two people in a grave, and that's it. Come out to Vancouver, and my eyes were open to this interesting practice I was totally unfamiliar with of allowing families to reuse casket burial space. There's no clear indication in our records of when it started, or that it was ever an issue, but it goes back at least to the early 1900s, 1910, 1920, and this notion that, you know, if you, you know, I mean, in those days you were burying a body unprepared in a simple wooden box, and it was put in the ground, and naturally after, you know, 10, 20, 25 years, most
There's
of that would,
left, really,
yeah, it? Very little, depending on some other factors, soil condition, that kind of thing. And Mountain View Cemetery would allow families then to reuse that space. Mm-hmm. So with families' permission, we'd open up the grave, and what little remains were left, we simply placed deeper in the grave, and another family member could go there. Mm-hmm. And, and that practice continues. And as far as my knowledge goes, it's unique in Canada, save for maybe Quebec, where provincial legislation allows cemeteries to resell space after 99 years, and probably unique in North America, except for some of the stuff you'll see going on in New Orleans and things. But yeah, very, very unique practice and of great benefit to many families.
And what a great model. And I think as the years go by, land becomes, within urban areas, becomes that much more difficult to come by for cemeteries. This practice is sure to expand and continue.
Yeah, and it's a year, I mean, in Canada's a young country, right? What are we, we're not even 100, are we 150 years old almost?
100, yeah.
Once you get to 200, 300, 400 years old, some of these challenges, as we can see in European cemeteries, mm-hmm. have been addressed years ago. Mm-hmm. So it's not an unknown practice, an uncommon practice. It just is in a young country.
Well,
like Canada.
And North America, truly, isn't yeah. it? I mean, North America is unique in the world in that we dedicate this little bit of geography forever, free in perpetuity.
That's a
long
people,
time.
And yeah. we think it's limitless, yeah. but it's not in all areas, especially the urban centers.
Certainly isn't. So for those families that do choose to reinter, are they doing that because they want to use the family plot again, or what do you think the reasons are for that?
There's a number of reasons, but I think the key one is you can have family members buried in that same family grave. So mm-hmm. instead of, we've got, you know, one or two sites here, and now you can go buy a new site in some other portion of the cemetery or 100 yards away or a couple blocks away or maybe in another cemetery, you actually have the ability to bury, you know, children with their parents and children with their grandparents and parents with their grandparents and really establish a family plot. Even though you don't have, you know, 8, 16, you know, a huge number of grave mm-hmm. sites.
It's, yeah, like it used to be in the old
yeah.
days.
And again, in Vancouver, you know, or the Lower Mainland, I mean, cemetery space is at a premium. It's expensive. And so when families can reuse an existing space, it actually economically is to their advantage as well. They're mm-hmm. saving the purchase of an additional site.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think one of the, for me, one of the most moving aspects of Green Burial is the engagement with the community. And you've been one of the leaders in welcoming the community to the cemetery, the facilities you've built there, the programs you've had there. Mark Lindy, our producer today, he's played there with his band. The Night for All Souls that just ended, you and Paula Jardine, public artist, were the founders of that. Talk some more about that aspect of engaging the community in that way.
Well, yeah, again, I mean, when people who, if you haven't had that cemetery experience, you have a notion of it and it's kind of a scary thing or a sad thing. But cemeteries aren't for that one-time event. They're not for the dead. Cemeteries are for the living. Our cemetery is, when it was established in 1886, was well outside what was the populated part of Vancouver then. Mm. But now 120 some years later, we are surrounded by a neighborhood. So we are part of that neighborhood, part of that community, and the cemetery is an active part of that space. So we're trying to do what we can to encourage that, promote that in a respectful way, and engage people with the cemetery in a way that makes it a bit more comfortable for them. Mm-hmm. So when they are faced with that moment of their first experience of bringing, you know, a loved one who's died to the cemetery, it's not something they're unfamiliar with. They have a relationship, an understanding, and a connection to that place, because that's the real thing with the cemetery. Anywhere you bury your place, human or cremated remains, is that connection to that place. Mm-hmm. It's a place, a record is kept, you can come and see it. Some people come frequently, some people, and I've seen this many times, come once in a lifetime. Mm-hmm. But the importance and value of that place and being able to stand at that site for a few moments of where their grandfather is or great-grandfather, someone they may have met once or twice in life or may have never met, it's a tremendously powerful moment for people, and that's what really signifies the importance of that sense of place.
Oh, you're absolutely correct, and cemeteries are really where the community narrative is literally writ in stone, isn't it? And that's a key part of cemeteries.
Yeah, you can walk around Vancouver and you see these names on buildings and names on streets and hear of all these people who've done this stuff, or you can come to the cemetery one place and stand at the spot where that person mm-hmm. is, who that building's named after, mm-hmm. who designed this, who built that shop, who mm-hmm. owned this store, who, you know, was the mayor of Vancouver, all these folks. That whole history is there. lying quietly, waiting for people to come and share the story.
Lying quietly, indeed. Yeah. And as Remembrance Day approaches here in another few days, Vancouver is one of the three or four largest areas of fields of honor in Canada, is it not?
Yeah, we've actually got the most number of veterans buried in our cemetery, more than any other cemetery in Canada.
In one location.
In our four military areas, there's more than 12,000 veterans. Right. So, yeah, Remembrance Day is pretty important.
Yeah. And there's so many other aspects of not only the vets that we celebrate their dedication to our country, but the children's area that you created an infant garden to remember those little folks who may not have made it past the first day. And I think we both agree that may be one of the most emotional parts of the whole site.
Yeah, and with our site, I mean, we've got a 125-year history, about 150,000 people buried there, and almost all of them were what we would call today green burial.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, no outer container, simple caskets, buried directly in the earth and returned to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So now all of a sudden it's got this notion and a little bit more concern to it, and that's what we're really excited about, hosting this event next Saturday at the cemetery, to have folks come out, hear about it, for us to talk about it, us to learn and explore what that means and how we can start to, you know, sort of share that message with the community and let people know that these options are available.
Great. And that's November 7th, Mountain View Cemetery. Come by around 1 o'clock and we'd be delighted to see and talk to those in the community that are interested in this key aspect of end of life. So quick break and we'll be back with another prominent leader in the cemetery business.
And you can get more information about the Green Burial Society and the symposium by going to greenburialcanada.ca. You are, of course, tuned to 100.5 FM CFRO, your Vancouver Cooperative Radio Station. And since Glenn mentioned cemeteries in New Orleans, it's only fitting to play a great favorite of ours here, John Boutte, who was actually standing at the foot of Canal Street with his songwriting partner, Paul Sanchez, a number of years ago. And they were into a conversation about, oh, yeah, you know, this member of my family's buried there. And oh, Sanchez said, oh, yeah, my family. So they wrote this song together called At the Foot of Canal Street.
Don't waste your time being angry when a moment's better with a smile. If you feel your time's been wasted here for a while, standing at the bus stop, just across from crowds, waiting for that driver to take me to my heavenly house. I'll see you there
at the foot of Canal Street.
What will they wear
at the foot of Canal Street?
Will the band be playing
at the foot of Canal Street?
What will the people be saying
at the foot of Canal Street?
Does your father lie there? Does your mother pray? I'm gonna put on my golden crown at the foot of Canal Street. When the riverbanks are overflowing and the streetcar has seen its day, when all is gone, the plantations trim a bucare, I'll be swinging to that music on higher ground, where pops is blowing walk on, up with Gabriel making sacred sounds. I'll see you there
at the foot of Canal Street.
What will you wear
at the foot of Canal Street?
Will the band be playing
at the foot of Canal Street?
What will the people be saying
at the foot of Canal Street?
Does your father lie there? Does your mother pray? I'm gonna put on my golden crown at the foot of Canal Street.
Thank you.
the streetcar has seen its day. When all is gone, the plantation, Treme the Fucare, I'll be swinging to that music on higher ground, where pops is blowing walk on, Purple Gable making sacred sounds. I'll see you there
at the foot of Canal Street.
Oh, what will you wear
at the foot of Canal Street?
Will the band be playing
at the foot of Canal Street?
What will the people be saying
at the foot of Canal Street?
Does your father lie there? Does your mother pray? I'm gonna put on my golden crown at the foot of Canal Street. See you there
at the foot of Canal Street.
What will they wear
at the foot of Canal Street?
Will the band be playing
at the foot of Canal
what
Street?
What will the people be saying
at the foot of Canal Street?
Does your father lie there? Does your mother pray? I'm gonna lay all my burdens down. At the foot of Canal Street.
We are having a conversation about Green Burial. My name is Eric Lees. I am a landscape architect, and we specialize in cemetery planning and design, and one of our most favorite parts of our job is green burials. And we are speaking this morning with two prominent leaders in the Green Burial and Cemetery services in BC. We just spoke with Glenn Hodges from Mountain View Cemetery. We are joined now by Stephen Olson, Executive Director of Royal Oak Burial Park in Saanich, BC. Stephen is both a cemetery manager and a funeral director. So he has helped families from the time of death through funerals right up to the final letting down into the ground. Stevens created the first dedicated green burial area within a cemetery in Canada, in fact, at Royal Oak, if memory serves me correctly, about 5 years ago, and since then has been an advocate of green burial. He was one of the main driving forces behind the creation of the Green Burial Society of Canada. Speaks all over the world on green burial, in fact. And so we are delighted to have him on the line from his home in Victoria today. Welcome, Stephen Olson.
Well, thanks, Eric. It's great to be with you this morning.
Ah, indeed. A pleasure. Stephen, we've been talking about the main tenets of green burial. Glenn Hodges talked about how green burial at a hybrid cemetery, Mountain View, has come to pass. And really, as Glenn was reminding us, has been that way for almost since the inception of the cemetery. Can you describe for us and our listeners just what the green burial area is at Royal? Give us a bit of a picture over the radio waves here of what that is.
Sure. Well, our green burial area is about our initial or our first phase of it is about one-third of an acre. It's triangular in shape. It's bordered on two sides by an already existing mature second growth forest, very typical Pacific Northwest second growth forest, and then the third end of the triangle overlooks the existing cemetery. So it's a part of the cemetery, but it's on the edge of it, and a part of a forest that is already existing there. There's 255 lots in the first phase of this area. And it's very, very, by intent, it's very, very natural setting. It's, as I say, isolated from the more conventional part of the cemetery. And there's only pedestrian access into the site, no roads, none of the typical infrastructure you would see in a more conventional cemetery.
And as the burials occur, Stephen, native vegetation, fir trees, gary oak, that kind of vegetation is planted on top of those graves, right?
That's correct, yeah. As we work our, you know, we literally work our way out of the site back to the primary entry area, we plant, it's all planted with native and indigenous species, whether it's something as simple as ground cover or introducing new trees into the area that are complementary to the existing forest in the area.
And I know you're pretty flexible with the way you manage this area, but in general, embalming is discouraged, correct?
We don't allow embalmed bodies in that section at all. So.
And you encourage a very simple casket or shroud?
Absolutely. I would say at least 20% of the burials that we've done in that section have gone into the ground. It's just in shrouds. And then the other interments go into the remains or the body goes into something that must be, by our bylaw, a fully biodegradable casket or container.
And sometimes that's made from wicker, sometimes from simple pine or fir box, lots of different materials.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had families consult with us, and they've made their own for their family members. And as long as we're looking for, you know, as you said, we've put wicker in there. There's willow. We've done it's a sort of a stiffened wall. Casket that's actually quite interesting. We've seen they come from England. They're commonly used in England for natural burials over there. So we've seen a number of different kinds of containers.
And there's various cornstarch and potato starch coffins
right.
as well,
yeah.
aren't there?
That's
yeah.
right.
And people
mm-hmm.
oftentimes will decorate those
yes. yeah.
as part
yeah.
of the mm-hmm. the end-of-life ceremony. I know I can say for myself, when my mom died a couple of years ago, my brother and brother-in-law and I actually built the coffin, and my sisters wove the or sewed the shroud, and we... we had the good fortune of being able to cremate her at your facility. That was her wish, and that whole process was very therapeutic for us to keep ourselves busy. And during that end of life time, but it made for that final goodbye to be that much more meaningful for us.
Yeah, that's what we hear from our green burial families is that. They, you know, this when they select this green burial, they become very involved in the entire process, right, from when at the time when the death has occurred to the point where they come out to the cemetery and place the remains and the casket in the grave and fill in the grave themselves. They become an active participant in that entire death process, and they echo what you're saying to me, is that it's a very cathartic process, mm-hmm. but when they're all done, they come back and tell us how positive it was for them,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
how it really helped them to grieve.
Yeah, it's I don't for my own part. The idea of closure doesn't work for me. I know we use that phrase a lot, but it's really a journey, isn't it, Stephen?
That's right. Yeah,
it's really
I think most bereavement professionals will tell you that there's no such thing as closure. It's you move through different states of your understand, you know, emotional state and intellectual state as you move through. Dealing with a death and where you place that experience in your life, and it's always with you. Closure has unfortunately become an easy term for mm-hmm. us to talk about. Mm-hmm. You never forget, and so it becomes, you know, what can I do to move through this process as healthily as possible.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you've talked about that I found somewhat surprising is how the Green Burial service that you and your team offers there has really become, if you can say this, a highlight of the workers' experience, those men and women who are tasked with opening the grave and assisting with the families to close it.
Yeah, that has been one of the, the sort of the surprises of, when we were initially contemplating this and working with you to design the section, there were a lot of concerns about, how this was all going to work and would it be difficult for our staff to do? Would there be challenges in that process? Would there be challenges in working with the families because of some of the restrictions that are placed on them with the Green Burial? And it's, the surprise was that none of the concerns or challenge we thought existed, they just never manifested at all for us. In fact, it was the exact opposite. And as I say, our staff, whether it's our family service staff in the office or even the ground staff that prepare the graves and do the interments, they've all found it to be a very, very positive experience. And I think part of that is seeing the families and the directly involved with the process. And we really have a sense that we're doing the work we've set out to do, and that's to really help people through a very tough few days.
That really is your mission, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is.
It really is.
Yeah.
I want to create the opportunity for Glenn Hodges, a colleague of ours, Stephen, that, of course, you know all well. And Glenn, did this resonate with you as well? The you've been very flexible at well at your cemetery, encouraging families to become involved?
Yeah, I hear Stephen talking, and he really hit something for me that sort of, even in the Green Burial area, there are restrictions, and that's, I look back at my 20-year history in cemeteries, and that's one of the things, you can do this, and you can't do this, and you can't do this, and you have to do this. And we've really, cemeteries in the last long period have created this sort of, this is what you can do, and you can't do anything else. And now this whole Green Burial thing, and again, Royal Oak is an excellent example of that. You have the sort of traditional, what's become recent historical cemetery of, the liners and upright monuments and the nice manicured space. But now we've opened up the cemetery, relaxed some of those requirements in another area and given people an option. And now people actually have a choice, and they're exercising that choice. Because the traditional cemetery clearly isn't for everybody, and Green Burial's not for everybody. And in the case of Mountain View Cemetery, the reuse of graves, some people think that's fantastic and take advantage of it. Other people don't want to do that, and they don't have to do that. So to me, the lovely thing with this Green Burial stuff is it's opening up, some cemeteries, at least Mountain View and Royal Oak Burial Park for now, to sort of look at what we have not allowed families to do in the past, try and find ways to give them more options, more choices. And the families are definitely, as you can hear from Stephen's experience, that's resonating with them. The families are appreciating that. And these families now are engaging in this, the cemetery aspect of the funeral for sure, and the funeral part as well, in a much different and clearly meaningful way for those families. And that is just a huge gift that we're providing for those families.
Well said. Well said. I mean, even at Royal Oak, Stephen, I think you've had a sort of a menu of plants that people can choose and even be involved in the planting of and the helping to fill the grave in afterwards. Really brilliant moves there.
Yeah, the great topic in terms of what we've done and what the Green Burial has done is instead of restricting the family and say you can only do things a certain way, we've opened the door and we've said you have permission to do pretty much whatever you want. So if you want to make your own shroud, build your own casket, transport the remains in in your own family vehicle, lower the casket into the grave with ropes, fill in the grave yourself, and then come back a few months later and select the plants that will be planted on the grave. This is just, they're almost, they don't believe us. They say. it's that giving them permission to participate has been just a tremendous experience, and that speaks back to how positive the interaction with the families has been.
Talk to us, describe for us the memorialization aspect at Royal Oak Burial Park.
Yeah, and so in our section there, we have, there are five large boulders, basalt boulders. They were sourced in BC, and then they're placed strategically throughout the site, and then people can have the name of the deceased inscribed on one of the boulders, usually the boulder closest to where the interment takes place. And then eventually those boulders, and when the site fills up, they will be connected by a very simple trail through this restored landscape, natural landscape. And this is one of the things that we don't permit in the natural or the green burial area, is there are no individual memorials on the graves at all. When you walk into the site, there's no, you know, as it starts to mature, which it's doing now, it's very difficult to ascertain where the graves are in the site in terms of individual graves. We always know where the graves are. That's a requirement of cemetery law or regulation in BC. We have a lot plan, we have a survey, we have the GPS coordinates for all the graves, so we always know where they are. But to the lay person and walking in there, there's nothing to distinguish individual graves. But there are the memorial boulders where people can walk through and view those.
Yeah, and you know, I think anyone who's been to a Jewish cemetery will recognize the little stones that are put on top of, you know, that we have this sort of primal, atavistic almost need to mark the grave. And I think what you've done there is allow people to put, you know, a small little river stone, or, you know, people will inevitably, just by human nature, want to, at the time of burial, leave something there. And you've been flexible in that respect, too.
Yes, some do leave small stones and things. You know, if it's in character, I guess, with the, you know, the environment, the aesthetic of what we're looking for is to maintain a fully natural site, then we will leave it. But in terms of people, as you say, there's an instinctual thing almost to place something or a mark or make a mark or leave an indicator that they were there. But one of the surprises we found out of this was that we thought would be a major objection to no individual markers or headstones. It's the site itself that is the memorial for these families.
It really is, isn't it?
It is,
I think we would all agree, Glenn, yourself from Mountain View, Stephen Olson, Royal Oak Burial Park. This is a trend, isn't it? And we're going to see more and more as baby boomers especially come to these choices and decisions in their lives and that of their families. So I thank both of you, Glenn Hodges, Mountain View Cemetery, and Stephen Olson, Royal Oak Burial Park, and would welcome the community. November 7th, Green Burial Symposium. We will be talking about these and many other matters. It's an opportunity to learn about more about green burial, learn about Mountain View as well, which is really a keystone of the community's open space and cultural fabric in this community. A really important place to know and understand and come along. November 7th, the Green Burial Symposium. With that, my name is Eric Lees.
And Stephen will be there.
And Stephen will be there too. And Glenn.
And Glenn will be there. You'll be there. And I'll be there.
We'll all be there. And we want everybody in the community to come out.
Thank you, Stephen, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
Bye now.
Bye. Stephen Olson from Royal Oak Burial Park.
One of our leaders.
A good man with a long history.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And you are tuned to 100.5 FM CFRO, your Vancouver cooperative radio station. Listener supported, always commercial free. Make a better world where we connect community activity to community radio. Stay tuned next week when Britt Bachman will host Van Document, who is going to have on as her special guests Kimberly Phillips from Access Gallery, who will be updating you on their artist residency, 23 Days at Sea, where they have artists on freighters going between Vancouver and China. It's a very interesting project, and this will be part two that you get to catch up with Britt and everybody on Make a Better World next week. Glenn, Eric, thank you so much for coming down today. And again, the symposium next week, you can get information by going online to greenburialcanada.ca. And let me take you out here with the Dixie Hummingbirds, When I Go Away. Thanks for tuning in.